Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
So as one of the few people I know who still subscribes to the Paris Review, a few months ago, in the winter issue, I'm thumbing through it, I'm reading poems, I'm reading interviews, I'm reading what that fabulous magazine has, and I come across three poems by someone named Callie Siskel. That name is very familiar to me, the Siskel, but I remember Callie, too, as I just told her, once running into her dad, Gene, and her little tiny self as they were walking to visit the zoo. That's a lot of years ago, Callie. It's great to see you, and I cannot tell you how proud your dad would be of this book. Your mom's proud.
Yeah, thank you so much. This is such a pleasure.
Well, we're going to go through this entire sort of your life story from Francis Parker on and decide and try to figure out why someone would choose to be a poet. Because, of course, first of all, there's no money in poetry. But your mom told me that a fourth grade teacher of yours told her at Francis Parker that Callie, quote, Callie is growing to grow up to be a writer. Could you possibly have known that? You remember this teacher? Her name was
Mrs.
Cholden. Yeah.
Yes, I do.
When did you feel that? In fourth grade.
I did not, but I do remember in high school being assigned to recite poems from memory. And I remember we delivered them. Parker has this amazing tradition of having morning assemblies.
Sure.
Where the students, you know, get to perform music, art, culture. It's very expressive.
The Latin school used to do that, too. That was my alma mater.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. And so I recited poetry. And I think it was just one class. But now in my mind, it's like an eternity. But it felt so empowering to stand up and recite an incredible poem. I believe I recited Personal Helicon by Seamus Heaney.
Sure.
And I remember memorizing that poem at home, and it became this kind of incantatory experience.
Then you graduated Parker. You then went to Yale, as did your dad,
yes.
As did your older sister.
Yes.
When did poetry come into your life in a way that would say, oh my God, I think I want to devote my life to this form of writing? I mean, you obviously were a writer.
Yeah. Well, my freshman year at Yale, I took a class called Versification, and it was a special elective for freshmen, and it was the strictest class I've ever taken of any kind.
How so?
It was about meter and rhyme only. The teacher didn't really care what you were writing about or whether it was meaningful. It was, can you write in perfect meter and rhyme and write in these very old forms? And we would have conversations about, we would scan, there's a term called scansion, where you scan lines of poetry. It was very exacting. It felt more like math than literature. But something about that challenge was really exciting to me, and learning this other side of poetry, that it's not just a journal entry, that it has so much, you know, history and specific forms.
What sort of poetry did you write before this strange career choice?
I think nonce poetry. You know, I wasn't writing anything deep about myself, anything of import. I was writing in forms, these villanelles, pantoums, sonnets.
Sure.
And I was just thinking of, you know, easy material, but because I was mostly working on my craft. I remember writing a very embarrassing poem about being a third wheel on a date, for example. So,
your dad died when you were 12, and did you know him as a writer? Or just as a dad? 12's a transitional time for any child. But
yes.
Did you know him as a writer?
I knew him as a writer in the sense that I watched him write. And viscerally, I knew him as a writer. He typed with his two index fingers. I can still remember that.
Me too. Me too.
Amazing. Me too. Yeah, I can see him. I can see him at our computer. Before he had a computer, it was like kind of an electric typewriter. I can picture him writing so easily. So in that sense, yes, I knew him as a writer, and I knew his habits and traditions. But I didn't know him as a reviewer in the sense that I wasn't reading them. You know, maybe I was towards the end.
Did you know him from television? I mean, he and Roger were
yes.
Yeah, those were literally the two most famous film critics in the world yeah. in their day.
Yeah.
Did you know him from television?
Yeah, I did. And I
was it appointment viewing for the family?
I don't remember sitting down as a family and watching, but I remember just him being on a lot. And I remember watching him a lot on our very tiny television that we had in the kitchen. And I also remember that I used to ask him to wear a specific tie when he was on air as sort of like a private, you know,
message.
Moment of connection.
Oh, how neat.
Yeah.
The thing about this book, and we'll concentrate more after I get your life story on Two Minds, which I think is just as good a collection by a young poet as I've ever read.
Thank you.
Your dad is all through this book.
Yes.
And is the book, a little off topic before we get to your academic background, is it, I guess many people would think, well, this is an elegy.
Yes.
This is an elegy. I, on the other hand, and not just because I knew your dad, I find it a sort of celebration, too.
Hmm.
Is that an idiotic sort of criticism?
No, that's wonderful. I hope it has multiple notes and tones. I think that for me, the elegy, which is a genre of poetry that laments the dead,
yeah.
is also a very dexterous genre. It's a genre now. It used to be a form. And it allows you to rewrite the past, and you can tell it differently. You can celebrate the past. You can sort of harness loss in a way that's empowering. So there's a lot of like quote positive emotions that come from looking at yourself in grief or grieving, even though of course the primary emotion is plaintive.
Can one, meaning you, can you trust your memory? I've always found that even in my non-poetic writing and my weird stabs at fiction, I find memory not only warming and rewarding, but very tricky, too. It's kind of insidious in a way.
Yes. Actually, that's funny. I have that word in my book. So I agree about the insidiousness. And I also think that one of the exciting things about poetry is that, you know, and all literature is that it doesn't have to be the quote truth. So
exactly.
I think that composite memories, memories of other people's memories, all of that is definitely a part of my writing process. And because my dad was someone who I've learned about a lot since he's died,
of course.
Of it is not primary in a way that I think is something I struggle with, to not have the sense that I have as many primary memories as I would have wanted, and that many of them are being told to me through other people.
Through other people. That's the voice of Callie Sisko, who's going to be on for this entire hour, talking not only about her academic life, her little baby, her husband, her life in Los Angeles as a co-poetry editor of a publication. I have not met Adrian Mateka is the editor of Poetry Magazine.
Yes.
I know him, but this is a great job for you. We will be back. Please stay tuned in a couple minutes. Welcome back. I'm sitting here for this entire hour with Kelly Siskel. She did a chapbook before this fabulous hardcover collection titled Two Minds. Who are the two minds?
The two minds are both inside of my mind, but I think one of the things I liked about this title was it lent itself to multiple meanings. And one of them, of course, is my father and myself.
Yeah.
But also the extent to which I identify primarily as someone who lost my dad. And then the other mind that thinks I'm somebody outside of that story as well.
Yeah, no question. You pull it off. You really pull it off. So you're at Yale. When at Yale, you get a degree in what?
In English.
Okay. With the idea of doing what at the time, Kelly?
I think with working in publishing.
Okay.
Wanting to just be around books, wanting to be paid to read books to some degree.
The great thing about the world of publishing is to get paid nothing to read books.
Yeah,
basically,
I didn't care about
in
that.
In New York, yeah.
Then.
Then you decided to go to graduate school, yes?
Yes. So then I went to Johns Hopkins for a master's of fine art in poetry, which was a 2-year degree, and then I stayed a 3rd year to teach.
And how was teaching?
I loved it. And that was the impetus to do a PhD so that I could put myself in position to be a professor, which is my current goal.
When did you publish your first poem? Or when did someone publish your first poem?
I think it was 2010.
Yes. What was it?
It was a poem called First Date.
Nice.
It was my first.
The third wheel?
This one, I was the other person of two. And it was about a date at a bar in New Haven in college and playing pool. And actually, apropos what we were just discussing, it was more about memory and how we access memory than it was about the person I was dating.
Right. Well, in the book, two poems, your sister's in here, your mother's in here, your father is certainly in here. He is the shadow in the book.
Yes.
I didn't notice whether Will, your brother, you have a sister named Kate, older, and a younger brother named Will, who is sort of following. We get too into it, but you can read about this in the Tuesday paper, though. Will has gotten into the sports world.
Yes.
And your dad was a huge sports fan, mostly Chicago Bulls.
Yes. My whole family, we love the Bulls.
Is Will in here?
He is. He's in the second poem. He's the you in the second poem. And then he appears in the poem Succession and possibly one other one. But everyone's accounted for.
Let's talk now. You wind up in Los Angeles after your academic life, right? And you decide to become a poet. When you do that, this book and some of the poems must have been brewing in your mind.
Yeah. This book is actually a compendium of poems over the last decade. So starting in my master's all the way up until like maybe the last year, maybe 2 years. So and I had a lot of, I thought about that a lot, about how far back I wanted to go in terms of including poems from my past into the collection. And I thought as a first book, I wanted to have that breadth of time. And I wanted the sense of an evolution of the way I wrote about my dad and the way I wrote about and thought about grief.
I think this book says a great deal about you.
Thank you.
I think if you read it carefully, none of the poems are very long. I'm going to read you a poem. Callie's going to really read the poems because I want to talk about the nature of page versus performance. Because the day... You know, poetry has always been a kind of oral tradition, but there's a real conflict, certainly academically, with what works on the page and what works on a stage.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a poem. It's called Mirror Image. When he was alive, we rode the elevator. I recall his reflection in the brass doors more easily than his body next to mine. Absence is not absolute. It's insidious. It leaves us the mere image. My face, for example, my brother's, his stance. That's really lovely.
Thank you.
That really, do you like it?
I do.
You wouldn't publish it otherwise, I suppose. But how does a poem like that, if I can ask, and it's too deep in the weeds, how does a poem like that come to be? Is it an image, Kelly? Is it a word? Is it how does a poet work?
For me, this poem and many others, it's a summoning. It's sitting down. And letting the memory come to me without sort of seeking a specific one. And I write a lot of poems that take place in the apartment I grew up in and around there. And I was just sort of haunted by the memory of riding the elevator with my dad and seeing him in the reflection versus seeing him next to me, which goes back to, again, our conversation about memory.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Do you write at any specific time? I've known over the years, a lot of poets, some who say, well, you know, I'll be sitting in a bar and then an idea will come to me and I'll write it down on a napkin. Others who, Gwendolyn Brooks, for instance, mm-hmm. who would sit every day and work on her poetry. Do you have a writing routine?
No, I don't. I have impulses and I trust those and follow them. I think I write my best poems at night. Because I can tell because I'll usually skip dinner or I'll eat dinner later and I love dinner. So I know that if I've pushed that back, it's because I'm in the moment. When I write in the morning, I think I'm a little more cerebral and controlled. And when I write at night, I think I let I let myself be a little more free.
It's been a long time since you've been in Chicago, hasn't it?
Yeah, I left for college when I was 18, and I haven't lived here since.
But you're back now. How does it feel? How does it feel to return to the place where your memories are, in a sense, here?
Yes.
Alive.
I always write from Chicago. When I go back into my mind, it's here. So it's my writing place. I just haven't lived here since I was 18. And it's very emotional. And looking out at the lake and being in a building that I'm sure my dad was in at some point, and being in the loop, I think of him all the time.
I think that's wonderful. Is there a sadness attached to many of those memories? There must be.
Yeah, of course.
How do you deal with that?
And a deep longing to go back.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it might be part of the reason I haven't lived here, because I think Chicago is an incredible city. I have amazing friends and family here.
Sure.
And even though it hasn't been an active choice, I wonder if part of it is that it is quite painful sometimes to be thinking about him when I'm here as much as I do.
I agree. I have stayed here, and so my parents are kind of alive with me when I'll cross a street or turn a corner.
Exactly.
And it all rushes back. I sadly don't have the facility to put it down in words.
You just did.
What? We haven't done a poem. I don't have the facility to put it between the covers.
Well, I felt that.
The covers of a book. And you're a teacher. You want to become a professor, yes?
Yes, I do, yeah. I love teaching creative writing, and I think it should be a prerequisite for college freshmen. It's such an important thing to do, to think about yourself. I mean, I very much encourage pretty personal writing, and to have the chance as a freshman, as I did, to think about yourself in that way, and to think of that as an academic discipline, I think is really wonderful.
You had, I'm sure, a number of great teachers, one of whom is one of my favorite poets, Louise Gluck.
Yes.
And you wrote a lovely sort of, you gathered a number of poetic voices in honor of her.
Yes.
Where did she teach you?
She taught me at Stanford during the Stegner Fellowship. She was my most recent teacher, and she read this book and helped me quite a bit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It was, so she was an inspiration and a mentor?
Yes. Kind of? Yeah, she was first my favorite writer as well, my favorite poet. She was at Yale, but she rejected me for her class, which was honestly for the best. I was not prepared to meet her.
What did
then.
You do to apply to the class? Did you give her a selection of poems?
I showed up at her office having missed the deadline very casually with my poems in my hand, and she said, "You're not ready."
Oh, okay. It wasn't your work. It was your...
It may have been all of it. Yeah. It may have been all of it.
Who else are your favorite poets?
My favorite poets, well, of course, Louise. I love Natasha Trethewey, a contemporary poet, Victoria Chang. I mean, she's publishing now in really beautiful books, one called Obit that I love, that really challenged my sense of what the elegy is. Brenda Hillman, I love her book Death Tractates, which I wrote on for my dissertation at USC. I really have been gravitating lately towards poets who write about grief, because it's been such a huge project of mine.
It's been on your mind. And also you seem to gravitate toward contemporary poets.
I do.
In a minute. The state of, I would assume that you're going to say the state of contemporary poetry is alive and well.
Yes. I mean, I think the amount of poetry that's being published, the variance of poetry that's being published, there's something for everybody. Social media has made poetry even more accessible.
True.
And especially for poetry where reading one poem a day can just be sustaining. I think that's been an incredible thing, to be able to read a poem online or on Instagram and then have had that experience.
Yeah, Poetry Magazine does that now. They do a poem a day.
Yeah, the poem a day tradition.
Sometimes based on, you know, high of Valentine's Day, so you read a Shakespeare sonnet or something.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to continue on with Kelly Sisko. She's going to read a couple poems from this remarkable collection. I'm going to ask her about the one, I think it's just one prose piece in here, and how that came to be, and what's it doing in here, and about her life and her new family, too. I'm very curious about someone as devoted still to her father and mother. Her mother's great. Jean was, too. what it's like to have a kid, what it's like for a poet to have a kid. We'll be back. You'll listen to the news. Kelly Siskel's here until 6 o'clock, and then we'll have Neil Sammers and Tom O'Gorman in here. We are talking about Kelly's first collection of poems, Two Minds, which I find a fabulous book, and not simply because I know some of the people in here and some of the poems evoke some memories for me. You know, she's not talking about her dad, Gene Siskel, sitting at the Tribune next to me, and both of us typing with two fingers in that old, that old-fashioned way. Your sister Kate and your brother Will are not writers. I mean, they may well be writers of some sort, but
they are. Yeah,
they took a different kind of professional course.
Yes.
Why?
I don't know. I mean, I think that. I think we all found the thing that we wanted to do. But I think my sister and my brother are both beautiful writers, creative writers, and they write for their jobs as well. I think writing was instilled in us from both of our parents, my mom and my dad.
No, so they're both smart, and feeling sorts. They both are, don't you think?
Yes.
They really are. Would you read a poem, please?
Happily.
Let's see. Let's do, if you don't mind, because you did talk about being back here and knowing that you lived here for a while, and about the apartment in which you grew up is a big part of your memories and the way they work. How about reading Echo?
Happily. Echo. In the long hallway, everyone's doors were closed. I touched every doorknob and saw myself magnified. When I was led into a room, I sat at the end of the bed. I refused to sleep in my own. I put my hands inside slippers and crawled around. I was a child. A jealous woman made me. When she said, "My pain is greater than your pain," I said, "Your pain." That I should originate anything was intolerable to me, but I considered it privately. To echo is not to repeat, but to diminish. Winter turned to spring, and I watched everyone grow bigger in my absence.
It's a lovely poem. That's
Thank
a
you.
Lovely, lovely poem. When you write a poem, it cannot, Kelly Siskel, come to you like this in a half hour.
No.
I'm curious about how one writes a poem.
Yeah.
You come up with a title. Do you come up with a title first?
I do.
Okay, nothing wrong with that. You say it. If you could see her, ladies and gentlemen, you'd say, like, "Rick, I'm sorry, I come up with a title."
Yeah, well, it's the only type A quality I have, but I need a structure. I often write towards an idea or a conceit or a painting. And so I like to have the title as a guidepost, as sort of a compass.
Sure.
Because even though I let my imagination and my emotion take me where it wants to, I want my poems to have coherence. And so the title helps me stay on theme. So this poem, obviously embodying the myth of Echo and Narcissus, who appears later in the book, it was important to have her name there.
You come up with the title, and then you begin to... Well, obviously, you begin to write.
Yeah.
How does that work? I mean, how, and you must, what kind of revisions do you do? Do you try to complete, to do like a first draft of a poem? I'm sorry for these technical questions, but you'll appreciate it, ladies and gentlemen, when you read the book.
I appreciate them too, so thank you.
Thank you. How do you do it?
So I revise as I go. I don't like seeing a line I don't like on my Microsoft Word document, in my Microsoft Word document. So I edit as I go. And then when I finish, I pretty much have the poem. And then at the end of that, which can take a day or it can take a couple days, I cut things out, but I rarely add much more in after that.
Wow, how interesting. How interesting. I always wonder how someone like Billy Collins, who is one of me, Billy Collins, for those of you who don't know, is a great poet. And he seems to be the kind of guy who just sits down and just writes the thing.
Very prolific.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. No kidding. A lot of drinking, a lot of jazz in his works too. You type with two fingers or more?
I type with all my fingers, my thumbs. Does anyone?
You take typing lessons?
Yes, we had to take typing
lessons. I'm charmed by the fact that your dad, Gene Siskel, and I were two-finger typists, as was my father, too. How hard was it to get this book published? This is such a weird, wicked time in book publishing.
Yeah.
I know so many writers who are just ready to blow their brains out because of the frustration of trying to get a book published.
It's hard.
When did you say to yourself, okay, I think I have a book here?
Probably, honestly, maybe 5 years ago. And I kept submitting it. A lot of poetry publishing takes place via these contests where you submit your book and then a series of judges read it, a final judge chooses it, and then they've teamed up with a publisher to publish it. And I submitted to contests for a long time before I started reaching out to presses directly. As I was receiving rejections every year,
What was the nature of the rejections? Were they form letters? Yeah.
They would announce who won instead of you.
Oh, nice. Charming.
Yeah.
How charming. And then, the Norton, you got a call? How did it happen?
I eventually did get a call, which felt very, very exciting. I love a phone call these days.
And what did the phone caller, who was the phone caller? And
the
what
phone
did
caller
he or
was
she say?
My editor, Jill Bieloski, calling to asked me a few questions, and I think at the end of the call, she said, well, we're so excited to have it, and I had to ask her to repeat that just to make sure I had understood correctly that meant she was going to publish the book, and she was.
Did they want revisions or any editing? Or
we ended up editing the poems, a few of the poems, taking out lines, cutting some of the poems that I had originally included, adding others. It wasn't major, but it was substantial, and I think she really helped it crystallize.
So holding the book, which is a very, very handsome, small hardcover book with a beautiful cover, how empowering was that?
It's amazing. And this cover, there's a photograph that I actually first saw in the Art Institute. I was with a friend of mine, and we were looking at a photography exhibit, and he is also a poet. He's actually going to be interviewing me and talking with me at Bookseller.
That's right. We must promote this at the Bookseller this coming Friday at 7 p.m. Callie will be there selling copies of her book and autographing copies of her book and be interviewed by a Chicagoan named
Richie Hoffman.
A poet,
a wonderful poet. And he and I went to our master's together. We were in Chicago at an Art Institute exhibit, and he asked me, of all these photographs, which would you pick for your book cover? And I picked this photograph by Abelardo Morel, and then I asked him to remind me what it was when I was asked what I would want to appear on my cover. So it's a dream to have that full circle moment, and this particular image that I saw in Chicago, and that contains two houses, which really suits the title of the book.
There's one, is it a poem in the book? There's one poem about the family plans to have a house.
Yes, yeah.
That's in the book. What's the title of that?
The title of that poem is The Plans.
That's a really, really lovely poem.
Thank you. Yeah, it's about a house that we were going to build before my dad passed away and that we kept the plans for but didn't end up building.
Wow. Wow. We got to take a break, and then we'll finish off this what's been a delightful hour with Callie Siskel. Again, she will be at the Bookseller, which is in the heart of Lincoln Square at 4736 North Lincoln Avenue. There are lots of nice places around there you can actually drink in the bar, in the bookstore, which is my kind of bookstore, wine or beer, and hear Callie and her pal talk about poetry. He's probably a lot more erudite than I, because he's a poet, too. Instead of saying, well, I've tried to write poetry, I don't know how to do it, and blah, blah, blah. So please stay tuned. She'll be back in a couple minutes. Welcome back. I have Callie Siskel for only a few more minutes, so I'm going to have her read another poem, because you should buy her first collection of poems titled Two Minds. You should be able to remember that title, too. Or you should go buy a copy yourself at the Bookseller at 4736 North Lincoln Avenue in the heart of Lincoln Square this Friday at 7 o'clock, where she'll be in conversation with a poetry writing pal. What's his name?
Richie Hoffman.
Richie Hoffman. I like that Richie is a name for a poet, talking about her book and selling her book, and you can buy wine and beer there. One of the things about her dad, one of the things that people remember forever, I remember a lot about Gene Siskel, is his affection for the film Saturday Night Fever, on his passionate affection for it.
Yeah.
Would you, Callie, read Transparent Man, which is another great poem?
Yes. Transparent Man. The garment bag was black like any other, but through the plastic window, I could see a square of white fabric. Before I saw Saturday Night Fever, that's how I knew the polyester suit, whose wide lapels opened onto a slick black shirt sewn deep into the pants. I would have never pictured bell bottoms on a man, but there they were, on Tony Manero, John Travolta, staring into an iridescent light, pointing his right index finger toward the ceiling as the dance floor changed colors. My father saw the movie 17 times and bought that suit, the exact one, at auction. I asked my mother why he kept it shut in cedar, hanging on a rack with all our winter coats, and not inside his closet, where, later, I buried my face inside his jackets. Why didn't we display it? That's not who he was, my mother said. Besides, it almost stood up by itself. It had to. No one ever tried it on. Once, I opened the garment bag and peered inside to see a different actor. One who seemed to play my father, full of light, a young, transparent man dressed up in white.
Young lady, that is a great poem.
Thank you.
It's a great poem because it's meaningful. It's also great fun,
yeah.
I think. It's great fun. And it's about your dad. You have been married for a couple of years.
I have.
Your husband seems like a very creative fellow, too.
He is. He's
internetly creative.
Yes.
I'm sure he's a great writer and all that other stuff. And you have a little girl.
I do.
Who is 9 months old.
She's 9 months old.
You must, she must be doted on by your sister and brother, and especially your mom.
Yes.
You must be very, very, very excited, Callie Siskel, to one day, before she's able to read Two Minds, to tell her about your dad.
Yes. And she has my chin, which is also my dad's chin,
yes,
which is in the poems, the cleft chin. So I already see him in her, and I can't wait to tell her more about him. And I wish you could have met her.
Yeah, I'll bet. Well, in a way, and this is a credit to you, in a way, she will meet him in Two Minds,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah,
I see him. I revisited him in the thin pages, in the pages of this thin book.
I'm so glad to hear that.
You know, it's also evoked a lot of memories for me, too. It might for, you know, whether you people read the book and didn't know Gene personally, and your memories will be evoked by thinking, oh, I saw him argue with Roger Ebert on TV one time. I remember that. I remember that very well. You got a good life, don't you?
Yeah. I do, yeah.
And you want to teach at the university level, yeah.
I do. I would also teach high school. I love creative writing. I just had the baby, and so I'm thinking about next steps. I have my PhD in creative writing and literature, and I hope to be able to teach for a career.
But you got to watch that baby for a couple of years.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying.
Yeah, you can't say to your husband, "Hey, here, take the baby. I'm going to go teach." Now.
I actually do all the time. We're really equal in our taking care of Faye, but I am very, very enamored with her right now and happy to be taking care of her.
I'm glad you're back for a week here to visit with family and with friends and with the past.
Yeah.
How's L.A.?
I love
how's
L.A.
L.A. as a book place?
I love LA. I have an amazing a job as a poetry editor at the LA Review of Books, which is a built-in literary community for me. And then having finished my PhD at USC last year, I have a community of writers through USC. So I feel very connected to literature and poetry specifically in Los Angeles. And I sort of love not being a part of the industry and having this kind of more, you know, kind of niche experience of being a poet in LA. And I love all the space to think and hike and drive and contemplate, and I love living there.
How is the book scene out there? Specifically, how is the bookstore scene in LA?
It's like the city.
They have Book Soup, right? That's their big...
Book Soup and Skylight Books, where I'm reading on April 30th, which is my local bookstore, and is an amazing bookstore. It has a tree growing through the middle of it, and gets amazing writers. And I think, LA is a city of neighborhoods, and each neighborhood has a great bookstore. So I think it's a good city for bookstores.
You're writing poems every day?
I'm not writing poems every day. I think it would dilute the process for me and the intensity. So for me, it's better to write less frequently and more, you know, intensely than it is to write daily. But I also really respect writers who take that discipline.
What is less frequently now? You must get struck by something.
Yeah.
Whether it's just a title.
Yeah, I've been writing. I actually have a title that is potentially going to be the title of my next book. And so it's a very specific conceit. So I'm writing poems. I would say now maybe one or two a month only.
Oh, nice.
I'm in a workshop with friends. And so we meet once a month, and that's my deadline. And I'm hoping to get back to writing maybe every week soon.
Kelly Siskel, you're a delightfully young woman.
Thank you.
An incredibly talented poet. I've got to introduce you to Adrian Mateka, the editor of Poetry Magazine. You've been in the Paris Review. You've been in a number of esteemed journals your poetry has, and I think it's time for you to get in the big noise from Chicago.
I would love that.
Thank you. Best to your family.
Thanks for spending so much time with my work. That's really meaningful to me.
It's not a long... This isn't Moby Dick. I must tell you, folks, there's a great deal of depth in this book, but it's an easy read, and it's a charming read, and it is... for me, it's a moving, a very moving read.
Thank you.
We'll be talking with two authors of a vastly different book. I don't think there's any poetry in... Neil Sammer's and Tom O'Gorman's memories of growing up in Chicago, recalling life during the 20th century, but you'll hear a great deal about it. Kelly, have a great time in Chicago. It's great.
It's
great to know you.
This was wonderful.
Oh, isn't that nice? It's her first live radio interview, too. That's great. Yeah, don't get hooked on this profession.